This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to tonight's edition of The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Sarah Ramantanis and I'll be your host tonight along with Ruby Susan. In preparation for World AIDS Day on Thursday, December 1st, we're speaking with Kathleen Ryan from the Burnett Institute, who's the Evaluation Manager at Pronto Community Health Centre about effective HIV testing. Stay tuned for that. Coming up next, we'll be speaking with Kids Helpline about recently reported increase in LGBTIA young people reaching out for support from the counselling service. Shelley Argent, National Spokesperson of PFLAG, joins us to speak about the importance of teaching tolerance.
Former on Joy 94.9. Recently, Kids Helpline Counselling reported there had been an increase in LGBTI young people using their services to reach out for support. This news came only days after Tyrone Unsworth, a 13-year-old Brisbane high school student, took his own life following years of allegedly relentless bullying over his sexuality. You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Ruby Susan.
And I'm Sarah Amantanis.
And we're joined by Tony Fitzgerald, the Manager for Kids Helpline Counselling Centres. Thanks so much for joining us, Tony.
Thanks for having me.
So a report has come out recently that Kids Helpline is seeing a gradual increase in LGBTIQ kids reaching out for their counselling services for support. This news came just after last week's tragedy where Tyrone Unsworth, a 13-year-old Brisbane high school student, took his life following years of relentless bullying over his sexuality. LGBTI students, young people, may not be reaching out particularly to Kids Helpline for bullying support. There does seem to be a trend that is growing of more and more young people seeking out support in this way. Has there been any look at what factors may be causing this kind of an increase?
Yeah, I think generally speaking, what we're seeing is greater awareness of issues that are affecting young people who do identify as LGBTI, and we've certainly been trying, obviously, to do some promotion in that area to try and reach out to young people and let them know that Kids Helpline is there to listen to them as a place for them to come for support. What we're seeing is greater awareness of issues that are affecting young people who identify as LGBTI. The more that we can encourage young people who've got questions, who are concerned, who feel like they need to reach out for support, I think that's a really positive thing. But I still think there's obviously more work to do.
One of the things that I suppose I found particularly confronting about the story of Tyrone, but for LGBTI young people in general, is that other people who are bullying others based on their perceived or identified same-sex attractions, young people generally have picked up these mentalities from outside. Do you think there has been any of this increase would be due to the fact that LGBTI issues have become quite front and centre on a national level, particularly with political?
Yes, most certainly. I think you know, particularly with the political debate over the last 6 to 12 months around same-sex marriage and also around school-based programs that are intended on promoting and celebrating diversity, I think that has provided much more prominence in the media, has sparked a lot of discussion around the issue. And so I think that's certainly contributing to what we're seeing. I'm concerned myself that there are still, in this day and age, there are young people out there who think it's okay to bully people around their sexuality. So I think it's really, really important that we do everything we can to redouble our efforts, not only to educate young people around this issue, but to educate those who might be an influence on their lives, whether that's parents, carers, adults. I think there are still some attitudes out in society, that are not okay, and I think we need to do everything we can to promote respectful relationships. If we take that approach of celebrating our differences and really, really looking at things from a positive point of view, I think we'll go a long way to working through this issue.
How much does the attitude of adults, particularly those, you know, in positions of public access or on public speaking platforms, even if, you know, young kids are not watching the news regularly, does that still have an effect on them? Or is it more that they then hear their parents or their family friends discussing these issues and pick up words from that?
Oh, I think generally speaking, adults are massive influencers on the attitudes of children, particularly in their formative years when children are looking, children and young people are looking to adults, whether they're carers, whether they're political leaders, whether they're in the media, they're looking to adults for guidance. Even just inadvertently picking things up in the media can definitely influence attitudes amongst younger people. So we've come a long way as a society, but I think we still have a lot more work to do to promote diversity within our community.
Statistics from the Human Rights Commission in 2013 reported that 80% of homophobic bullying is bullying that has occurred in the schoolyard. With your experience with the Kids Helpline, if there are more kids reaching out, does that mean that there is, and you said there is greater awareness, how long until that starts to trickle down, not just into the kids who are feeling the changes themselves, but into the environment around them?
Well, I think how long that takes to trickle down, I don't know, but I think what we must continue to do is within the school environment, because you're correct, most of the bullying behaviours happen within that environment. I think we've got to redouble our efforts to make sure that the messaging gets into schools in that environment, so that kids and really start to educate kids around these issues.
So, well, you mentioned before that it's a positive thing that more LGBTIQ kids are reaching out for help. Could you explain a bit as to why it is why it's positive?
Oh, well, because we know that the help seeking is a very, very important action for young people to take across a whole range of issues that they might be experiencing. Young people who are experiencing bullying shouldn't suffer in silence. And if they do reach out for help, whether that's to someone, whether that's to a trusted adult or a trusted teacher or a service like Kids Helpline, that means that someone's listening to them and that they can work with them to put in place some strategies to actually do something about the issue.
Yeah.
I think it's really important for young people to understand that there is something you can do about this. And if you bring this kind of behaviour out into the open, bullying I'm talking about, if we bring bullying out into the open, if you put your hand up and report it and complain about it and make sure that people are aware of it, if we encourage other kids who might be seeing this behaviour not to be a bystander and actually to stand up and say, hey, this is not okay, reaching out for help and support is the first step in resolving many of these issues. If you are listening to this and you need some help, you feel like you need to speak to someone, you don't feel like there's anywhere that you can turn, then you can give us a call at Kids Helpline. We're open 24/7.
Yep.
It's a completely free call. The number is 1-800-55-1800. Or you can jump on our website and have a chat to a counsellor via our web chat service. So we're here to help 24/7.
Thank you so much for your time, Tony. That was Tony Fitzgerald, the manager of Kids Helpline Counselling Centres. Thank you again.
Thanks for your time.
You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. Last week, a 13-year-old Brisbane high school student took his life following years of relentless bullying over his sexuality. We spoke with PFLAG national spokesperson Shelley Argent about Tyrone's situation, as well as possible causes and solutions to LGBTIA bullying.
You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Ruby Susan.
And I'm Sarah Amantanis.
And we are joined by PFLAG's national spokesperson, Shelley Argent. Is that how I pronounce that?
Yes, it is.
Shelley Argent. Thank you so much for joining us, Shelley.
No, my pleasure.
We've brought Shelley on the show today because we're planning to discuss LGBTI bullying, particularly a recently quite concerning report from Kids Helpline that says that the number of LGBTI young people seeking their services in distress has actually been increasing quite steadily recently. Now, last week, Tyrone Unsworth, a 13-year-old Brisbane high school student, took his life following years of allegedly relentless bullying over his sexuality. Now, Shelley, obviously this is something that is extremely distressing for the community and for friends of the community.
Yes.
You have yourself been mentioned that 80% of homophobic and transphobic bullying happens in the school grounds. To get started, why is it this young age particularly is where we see increased levels of bullying and particularly increased levels of at-risk behaviour for discriminated and marginalised groups, including LGBTI young people?
Look, it's really hard to fathom. I mean, we know that bullying has always gone on. Is it because now we're talking about it more? And so we are hearing about it more. And then also, too, with technology, it's becoming more extreme because, like this young child, he was not only just verbally and bullied at school, but I'm told that it was also on social media as well.
Yeah.
So that really adds to it. But as a parent, if my child at that age especially, and I'm not blaming the mother by any means, but I would be, if my child was on social media, I would be checking to see. But it seems that the mother was unaware of the social media bullying. But, I mean, I think also, too, with 13, it is a difficult age for a lot of kids, and it's where a lot of them, they don't like difference, which, again, is not an excuse to be bullying a child like this. And I think also for the school to have said that they didn't know that it was going on is absolutely no excuse.
Where do you believe children pick up their attitudes towards homosexuality?
Well, I think that's very easy. I think most of that comes from home. And I think also because a child never bullies on its own. If you haven't got an audience, there's no point.
Yeah.
Now, I think also too, you can't always blame home. But you can also, it's like kids get together, they're influenced. If one child is stronger in the group and he encourages the others to be bullies.
Do you think that there is any at all correlation between recent increases in LGBTI young people seeking help and the fact that over the last few months we have seen, for the first time in probably quite a while, LGBTI issues become front and centre of quite national, yes, public political debate?
Yes, yes, and I do. And I even know for myself, on my Facebook, I have had some of the most vile comments and nasty, nasty stuff. And some of it has been quite cutting. And so, but if you're a child and you're getting this, I could not imagine how they would feel. And I do agree with you that a lot of this is coming from the debate about safe schools. It's coming from, and in my instance, it was coming from the debate about plebiscite versus free vote. A lot of people just look for an excuse to just start, and they feel that it gives them license to, you know, stand up and say all this nasty stuff. And, I mean, there has been a lot of nastiness put out about safe schools, and it's all been so incorrect and misguided with what they, you know, people have been saying about the program, because it really is an excellent program. But the government stopped it because of, you know, right-wing people in the government and those that had influence. And you see, even with this child, I mean, like, I think he was aware that he was gay at a younger age. But as he would be getting older, he would be realising or feeling more isolated, more unaware of, you know, how people would be trivialising him. Plus, it would be an experience that he's, or something that he's experiencing right now, or would have been right now, with the bullying and the nastiness. So it was really like that poor kid's worst dream was coming true.
You actually mentioned before how the teachers at the school and the staff said that they had no idea or weren't really aware of the bullying that was going on. Do you believe that that could be a lot of the issue, the fact that the adults in society don't stand up and make this a priority?
Absolutely. Because what happens is they turn away, like, oh, this is too hard, I don't want to get involved.
Yeah.
Because bullying does not make you stronger. And even being the bully doesn't make you stronger, and it certainly doesn't make you a better person.
One of the other debates that's become quite a political showstorm at the moment is the debate over you know, 18C and this idea of discriminatory language. Yeah. Such an event as this, do you think that this highlights the actual physical damage that language can cause?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I just think the removal of 18C is an absolute joke. And when you think of it, it's only white, middle-class men in power. I mean, it's you may have a few white women, but that's it. You don't have Indigenous people. You don't have Muslims. You don't have gay people or trans people all wanting 18C removed. No way.
What can adults in the community do to help these younger people outreach and reach out for help when they do need it?
Well, I think myself that we all need to step up to the plate and we need to take note of what's going on around us. If we see a child that's looking unhappy, even if at the moment it isn't being bullied or somebody's saying nasty to it, they need to speak to that child, ask if it's okay.
We were speaking with PFLAG's national spokesperson, Shelley Argent. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, no problem.
You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. This Thursday is World AIDS Day, and as we try to move towards virtual elimination or total elimination, it's time to talk about getting tested. 25,000 people in Australia have been diagnosed and live with HIV. However, research suggests that there are anywhere between 10 and 30% more of that number who are undiagnosed. We're joined by Kat Ryan from the Burnout Institute, who's the evaluation manager at Pronto, the community health centre. Now, so official recommendation for testing is once a year, is what I've heard. Is that right?
Yeah, so it's once a year for any sexually active, gay, bisexual or other men who have sex with men. Mm-hmm. And it's up to four times a year for any guys who are considered high risk.
And so what would define higher risk?
So any condomless anal sex with casual or regular partners, having more than 10 sex partners in 6 months, mm-hmm. Any group sex or any drug use before or during sex.
So I think like once a year almost does seem like it's not a lot to get tested. Like, has there been suggestions that for best practice testing twice a year, like, or every 6 months or even every quarter for men in general who have sex with other men might be beneficial?
So increased testing is one of the main ways that we can reduce the prevalence of HIV. With guys getting tested, then they can go on treatment. But really, it's quite a burden for guys to be getting tested. Getting them in once a year is a bit of a hassle already.
Yeah.
And some of the data from the Burnet that we've got shows that only about 50% of guys are testing annually. So even
only
to 50%. Get up to that. Yeah, only 50. So we've got a ways to go to get up to just to the once a year mark.
What do you think are some of the barriers that may prevent or discourage men from getting regularly tested?
I think there's a range of barriers. They're both structural barriers, like finding the time to test, going during business hours is a burden for guys, cost of testing if it's not a Medicare billed service. And also there's still a lot of stigma around testing, building up the courage and getting rid of the anxiety of a diagnosis. So a range of factors.
So HIV testing is still seen as almost solely for gay men.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that accurate?
So it's really for men who have sex with men or people who have sex with men who have sex with men. So it's that exposure group is the risk.
But that opens it up quite a bit because, of course, you'd have bisexual men in that group and then those bisexual men sleep with women who will be part of that group as well. So
yeah.
When you see look open up like that, you quickly get a few more levels jumping on there. Is there a number? What about women who have sex with men who have sex with men? How regularly should they get tested?
So they should be getting tested for HIV as well.
Yeah.
They would be talking to their doctors about that. They would probably go in the same categories as if it was a high-risk sex act or not. And also with trans and gender diverse people as well.
Yeah.
So it's quite a broad range, really.
A lot of people. So the Pronto Clinic in Fitzroy does offer free testing services, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And so recently I've heard from some figures you presented recently that testing rates have increased and that there's actually a bit of a link with that. And recently Pronto has been approved for rapid testing, is that right?
Yeah, so Pronto is a rapid testing service. So that's mm-hmm. how it was established. So at the start they only offered rapid HIV testing and that was one of the big draw cards.
Yeah.
Just getting rid of that 1 week wait for the results made it easier for guys to come in and test.
How rapid is rapid?
10 minutes.
10 minutes over
yeah.
1 week. Wow.
Yeah, so it's a 30-minute appointment, but the actual test only takes 10 minutes. So it's such a reduction in the stress of waiting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so do you think what do you think is causing an increase in figures? Is there more awareness about it? Do you think there is a little less stigmatisation of the issue?
I think one of the really good things at Pronto is that they do try and reduce the stigma associated with testing. They've created a really nice atmosphere at Pronto so guys can feel more comfortable coming in and discussing what they're doing. I think also the fact that PrEP is getting so much media attention at the moment, especially in the community, means that guys kind of are testing potentially without this fear of a diagnosis, but more of a positive outlook about testing and what they can do in the future.
What are the costs for testing?
So at Pronto, it's all completely free. So the HIV test is free and then they bulk bill for the STI test.
Yeah.
So STI testing only came in February this year at Pronto, so that was pretty exciting. And it's free. A lot of clinics, so Melbourne Sexual Health is also completely free and then they don't use Medicare, so even international people can test there. And then other clinics, it just depends on their practices if they add something onto the bulk billing.
So where does Pronto, what role do they play in the PrEP landscape? Is particularly in Victoria as we get ready for the launches and for the rollouts.
Mm.
PrEP would involve, PrEP. If you're on PrEP, you have to be tested every few weeks anyway, or every few months.
Every few months.
So do you think that might encourage men to begin to see getting tested every 3 months as a routine?
Yeah, so Pronto actually, back in February, before PrEPX started, they started a PrEP clinic. So they've got a couple of doctors who are there specifically to see guys who are on PrEP. And so, yeah, you're testing every 3 months then. So that's separate to the general testing. And Victoria's seen a massive uptake in PrEP. It's really exciting to see that guys are so knowledgeable and so like really keen to take up this new prevention measure.
Absolutely. Now, is Pronto's client ration still, like, are you seeing a lot more action now? Do you think are you at full capacity with the number of people you're seeing per day? Is it getting to that point?
Yeah, so they've been at above 80% capacity for a couple of years now. And they've changed some hours and some days of the week to make sure that they're open the times that guys can come in.
Yep.
So it's open 4 till 8 during the week and Saturday mornings. So it's at times that guys can actually come in and get tested.
Is Pronto available for women at all?
Yeah, so anyone who goes to Pronto and asks for a test will be given one.
Mm-hmm.
If women present and they don't have any real risk factors, they can still be offered a test, but they might be recommended to go somewhere like Melbourne Sexual Health if a chlamydia test or something like that is more advised.
What are some things that do need to be done to kind of break down the stigma around getting tested for HIV or STIs in general, to be honest?
Yeah, I think there's a lot. I think in terms of guys who are testing at Pronto, there's still a lot of shame and stigma and this idea of a clean person versus like someone who's maybe HIV positive. So people talking like the terminology that's used in the community, I think there's still a ways to go there. And I think maybe with PrEP, these things may be shifting a little bit because guys can take more control.
Yeah.
So.
And so with one of the things I've heard about Pronto is that it has got open windows.
Mm.
Do you think that might cause some issues if people do feel like they're sitting there and people can see them and they know why they're in there? Because like while they now do STI screening as well, it's still known as an HIV testing clinic. So everyone who goes there knows what they're there for.
Yeah.
And they know everybody else knows. Do you think things like that might be a bit be creating a few obstacles, even mental obstacles, for people to actually take that step through the door?
It could be. I think that's actually one of the strengths as well, though. So for some guys, definitely it could be a barrier to them attending Pronto, but it breaks down some of those like clinical ideas of what a service looks like.
Yeah.
So you walk in, it's got a shop front design, they had a coffee machine, there's a couch. So some guys said that they walked past and didn't even realise that it was a testing service. So when we did focus groups, some guys were also saying that it's people who like are in the know that it's HIV testing, but other people would think that it's maybe like an architecture firm or something like that.
Well, I suppose it's still looking at the construction and of things, so everything's a little architecture when you look at it close enough. So do you think as far as why did Pronto begin including other STIs in their screening?
So one of the main findings from the early evaluation stuff that we did showed that guys were finding it hard to test frequently at Pronto because if they wanted to test for HIV, they could go to Pronto, but then to test for the other STIs, they had to go to another clinic that didn't have all of these benefits that Pronto had. So it was just a barrier to them doing frequent testing. And so it was something that was fed back and there was a bit of a funding issue trying to get it integrated into Pronto in a peer model. But in February this year, we managed to get STI testing in. So now there's parallel HIV, full STI testing. They'll swab you everywhere. And we haven't looked at the numbers yet, but hopefully then guys will be testing even more frequently at Pronto because mm-hmm. it's so easy now.
Is this one of the ways you think we can normalise more testing and make it more regular?
Yeah, I think so. I think guys then can have a conversation. And I think something about pronto is that you can talk about pronto rather than talking about just HIV testing. So yeah. It's kind of got this like personification or like its own little like vibe to itself. So guys can just like, so one guy was like, oh, I just like chatted to my friend when I was at breakfast. And then like he came for a test with me.
Well, it is Fitzroy. There are some good places for breakfast around there.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's quite handy. You can really slot it into your social life.
Brunch, pronto, fit it all in.
Yeah.
Well, and that's really encouraging. Now, there's been a lot of one of the things we've seen a lot for campaigns, there's been a lot of campaigns for women for breast testing awareness, and that's been quite successful. There've been quite a few viral marketing things there. Do you think we need something similar for HIV testing, not just for gay men, but for men and women, to remind people, firstly, that a number of people need to be tested, not just the groups you may think of, but also, again, just to kind of remind it that that's something a lot of people do regularly? Is there any plans or anything underway for a kind of, a normalisation awareness campaign?
Not that I am aware of. That's something that VAC would be in charge of. I think as far as HIV goes, the vast majority of notifications or of new cases are in men who have sex with men. So they really do have targeted messaging there. There could be some usefulness in maybe reaching out to some of the CoL population, so culturally and linguistically diverse, so looking at refugees and migrants, because that's where some of like the females are getting diagnosed predominantly in those populations.
Yeah.
So that maybe wouldn't be a viral marketing campaign or something. They're quite targeted interventions that they would be doing to kind of encourage testing and to also normalise it in those communities.
Fantastic. Now, so we are seem to be seeing a even over the last year or so in Australia, there has been a huge increase in about a positive campaign for this issue. Mm-hmm. Living positive as opposed to any other kind of language is a really positive phrase. And people I know in Australia have been living with HIV for 20 or so years without moving on to anything else. So do you think, how close do you think we are to being able to normalise this? And what can we do to encourage the men that we may know who may need to take testing a little more seriously?
I think maybe one of the ways to get guys to take it more seriously is just to even casualise it a little bit more and say it's not such a big deal anymore. HIV isn't the death sentence that it used to be. And like you said, guys are living for years and years, and really AIDS isn't not so much of an issue anymore. People get diagnosed, they go on treatment. And now we know that when guys are on treatment, it's actually quite good for them. So I think just getting through the message that it's not a huge deal. Obviously, we want to prevent HIV, but it's not a terrible thing if you do get diagnosed.
Thank you so much for joining us, Kat. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.